Welcome to How Musicians Make It. My name's Adam and I'm your host today. I'm talking with the founders of Cadence. Cadence is new music-related tech software, sort of a way to control everything on the stage and a practice tool. It's a really cool program. I'm talking with Jeff and Anton about what they made, and we're talking about the event that we meaning Gig Boss, are sponsoring on August 1st. It's a music technology event. People from Jamstick are going to be there. The people from the Campfire Foundation are going to be there. Campfire Foundation is a new streaming platform. Jamstick is really cool, like MIDI guitar kind of thing. And Cadence will be there. Some other music technology companies will be there. We'll be doing like little 7-minute presentations on all the various different music technologies that we have developed. And then Michael Kane will be there, who is an amazing artist and works for MacPhail Center for Music in Minneapolis. This is in Minneapolis at Improving. And I'll put the link in the show notes. It's an event happening on August 1st, 1 week from today. And it's going to be great. The tickets are free, but you do have to get tickets to get in. So it's just a hang. You're going to be able to check out some new music technology, talk to some people. I'll have T-shirts, stickers, hats, and temporary tattoos with Gig Boss stuff on them. It's all going to be free, so come on by. I think I'm only ordering, like, you know, 8 hats or something like that. So if you want a hat, you have to get there early. But I'm talking with Jeff. I'm talking with Anton. And one of the things we decided to do was, like, spitball on some different music-related tech startup ideas. I'm kind of full of them, and so I spit out a couple of these guys during the episode. But we also just learn a little bit about Jeff and Anton. We learn about their company, Cadence. And I talk a little bit about Gig Boss and what we're doing. Gig Boss just released brand new versions on iOS and Android. It's a huge milestone for us. We've been working on a rebuild for about the last year. And it's just been a lot of work and a lot of time. And my devs have really put in some serious hours. They are total saints, and they are crushing it. The new version is much cleaner than the last version. There's way fewer bugs on the Android version. So if you're looking for a better way to organize your music career, Gig Boss is the way. We're adding a bunch of features now. Those are our goals moving forward. So without further ado, this is my conversation with Jeff and Anton. Grab that link in the show notes to join us for Wavefront, a music technology event on August 1st, 2024 in Minneapolis at Improving. Tickets are free, but you got to have tickets. Thanks for listening. What's happening, you guys? How you guys doing? Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, man. Happy to be here.
Awesome. So I know a little bit about Jeff. Anton, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Like, what's your connection to music?
Yeah. So, I've been a musician since I was a little kid. I did the band and orchestra thing and then, started playing bass and guitar as a teenager. And then when I got into school, I was in the classical guitar ensemble at college and joined a band that was kind of already midstream there. And to tie it back to what we do, which I'm sure we'll get into, Jeff and I have had this conversation a number of times, essentially at the same time in like the very early 2000s when none of this was technically possible. I remember thinking, you know, it would be great if we could like project the sheet music up on the wall or something so that I could follow along. Cause I was kind of the, least, trained of the five guys in that group. And, as Jeff and I started talking about the Cadence idea, we realized that we, essentially at the same time had the same idea and had, both just kind of hung onto it for a while. And while Jeff was the one to kind of get the idea off the ground when we came together in 2020, it was funny because we'd each thought about this idea for 20 years.
Sure. So guitar, classical guitar, are you still playing in bands? Are you using your own? Like what do you do musically now?
Yeah. So, I've got a couple little kids, so I'm, and just, COVID and stuff, have not played in a proper band since, the before times. But I write and record my own stuff. I've got my own little basement studio that I play around in. I'm kind of a, self-admitted pedal nerd. I will buy anything Chase Bliss puts out there, that's the level of depravity I find myself in at the moment.
Yes, the gear trap, man. That's a wormhole for trumpet players too, and I generally avoid that trap myself, but man, it's easy to get to go down that wormhole, that gear wormhole.
You get for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. I love the idea too of projecting sheet music onto the wall. Has anyone done that? No, nobody has anyone done that? I've not even heard of that as a thing. I know that people like in churches they'll project, lyrics for congregations to read or whatever with standard projections, but in a rehearsal setting or even in a gig setting, that's a really interesting concept.
Yeah, and I mean, Jeff, do you want to go into it? That's kind of where we start.
Yeah, sure.
Well, Jeff, if you're going to talk, man, why don't you tell me first, tell me a little bit about yourself, and then we can talk about the projections and cadence a little bit more. So, what's your musical background?
Sure. I've been playing guitar since I was like 13. My older brother and uncle both played. Started like many people, my our age, playing Nirvana songs, CCR, the Beatles.
Yep.
My brother was kind of a virtuoso, kind of was playing in bars before he was, like he was 15 or 16, just really, really good musician. I always kind of just looked up to him, and we had the same guitar teacher, Mark Arneson, who's still pretty big in the music scene around town.
Yeah, I know Mark.
I mean, brilliant multi-instrumentalist. And so, yeah, I played in I guess you could call it a power trio, kind of a Rush wannabe type band
Nice.
called Triaxis back in the day with my good friends from went to Minnetonka High School, and Andy had one of the people in the band went to St. Thomas, and that's where Anton and Andy, they were in the band together, so that's how I met Anton.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, we I used to watch their band, Inglorious Mono. It was kind of a, what would you call it, like a
It's like
prog
space rock.
rock,
Yeah.
space rock.
Nice. Yep.
Was a fun band to watch, and yeah, I mean, Andy and I would rehearse our stuff down there, and I remember, thinking. Again, we were over the top with our arrangements. It was like, oh, let's do 12 bars of 13/8 and then 7 bars of, it's like just
That's that Rush influence, man. That's the
exactly. And that's how I heard when I heard you guys perform that 7/8 What I Am. That was pretty awesome.
That was fun. Yeah, that's just like take one note out of the bass line and it's in seven. There you go. Just drop a note. Yeah, it did nothing else to the bass line. Just dropped a note and kept going. So, Janet, can you squeeze these lyrics together? Yeah, cool, man. So like for you, when did the ideas of doing some kind of tech related musical thing start to pop up?
Well, I mean, like Anton mentioned, we both kind of loosely had this idea, and then it really began in earnest for me when I was the musical director of a tribute group around town that's no longer going, but it was called Starlet's Web, tribute to women, pop, rock, and country. Your typical, it was a cover band, but just, focusing on women artists.
Yeah,
And
cool.
the leader of the band, Stephanie Verone, she was a new project, six musicians. I never had played together, 3 hours of music, and it made for some tense rehearsals as she scheduled shows before we had the set or the musicians even together. And
Yeah, well, that's one way to get the band to rehearse, you know. Book the show, book the
but
shows.
when you distill six, working adults of 6 weeks of isn't really 6 weeks, it's like ultimately like maybe 10 hours if you're lucky. So I was like, there's got to be a way we could really do this more efficiently. And then on top of that, Stephanie wanted to, beef up the sound with tracks. So we were doing it the old school way of dropping WAV files into an SPDS,
Wow.
panning the, and it was just funny because it was all these songs where we're like, this time I know we've got it. And we'd get to like We'd get to a bar before we'd hit the chorus, and then a bar later the tambourine comes in and just like, oh, we keep missing this. So yeah, it was very late night infomercial of pulling my hair out, and I was like my flux capacitor moment of going back to what we thought, and like, yeah, let's do something where everyone can see what's going on in the arrangement, but also have it be customizable and also have the devices all sync together. And yeah, I quickly noticed that the feature set didn't really exist in any meaningful way. I was like, all right, is this the idea that I'm going to do? And I think I went home that night, started finding, look, I was like, we're talking about rhythm. What's a cadence? That's a word. So think I got the domain the next day. And then shortly thereafter, met a brilliant JavaScript dev who's also a musician. And then maybe like a month or two after that, Anton and I got together, and I showed him kind of what we had been working on. And Anton,
Well,
if you kind of want
actually,
to.
there's more to our origin story there, because in 2019 I'm a like designer, software developer guy by trade, and Jeff and I had talked in 2019. Jeff, I think you came to a dinner over here or something and showed us a very, very rough version of your idea. And although I was very intrigued, and we talked at that dinner about how, we had both had this some semblance of this idea for many, many years. I was at the time working for an agency, and we were doing work on the Fender Play app, and I was under a rock solid NDA. And so it got to the point where I was like, look, it's different. I know it's different enough, but it's still like a music app. I was like, I gotta bow out of this conversation. I was like, I hate to have to do that, but
So you can't even be talking about it because of the NDA with the Fender app. Yeah,
it
interesting.
was, I just remember being bummed in that moment, because I was like, I can see a kernel of something here. Like I said, it was very early days and it was very rough. But then COVID, I left my agency on March 1 of 2020, and then the world shut down 2 weeks later. I gave Jeff a call. I was like, come up from under the NDA, let's do
Wow, man. Wow.
it.
So Jeff, like, do you have any computer science background, or was it purely your friend who coded the, like, the initial thing?
Now, I don't know if the crowd can see the VHS tapes in the back. No, not a technical person per se. I appreciate it. I understand its power, but it's really, Terrence and Anton who have really, and our other, team, John and Dimitri, who have really brought the thing to life. So no, I don't. I know enough about HTML to be annoying and dangerous, but that's about it.
Okay. Cool. So when you started working on the app, Anton, and started building a team around you guys to sort of realize the vision in a more complete way, what was the timeline from that moment to actually being ready to launch a product?
Oh boy.
Oh. I mean,
Like, I'm
I should
curious
just.
because, like, there are people listening to my podcast, I'm sure, that have ideas, that have tech ideas, that want to execute something, that maybe want to build a team, that maybe have coding experience. So many musicians do now. So, like, what could somebody like that expect if they have a big idea? Like, what kind of time commitment are we talking about? What kind
I
of
mean, it was one of those silver linings of the that first terrible year of COVID for me, insofar as my work kind of dried up, and I had very little else to do. And Jeff and I had some very long, serious conversations about, if we're going to do this, let's give it the old college try here, and try to make it not just your goofy side hustle you pay attention to a few hours a week, but literally jump in feet first. And coming from kind of a you know, art director, creative director, sort of Don Draper like background. My goal at the time was to tear the thing down to its skeleton and figure out like, what the hell is this and who is it for? You know, it's at that time, I felt like the application, the features set was growing so quickly that I couldn't even keep up with it.
Yeah.
Jeff and Terrence were, and so, you know, while those guys are cranking away and I'm working with my team on the branding and the design and the UI, the UX and all of that stuff that's in my wheelhouse, we were starting conversations with our now friends at the MIDI Association. We were lucky. Jeff got in touch with the director of the MIDI Association, who kind of brought us under his wing. And one of the amazing things that those guys have done for us for a few years now is invite us to NAMM in LA. So, nice. You know, we get to go and we get our own space, but we're kind of all the MIDI Association companies are kind of all in the same area.
And so did they acquire a stake in your company? Did they like how just a partnership?
No,
just, not even.
Yeah.
Mentorship.
Yeah.
Just cool. Adam, the president, has just been very generous with his time, and the whole organization is really just like they love the members and do a lot for them.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's kind of like a trade union in the sense that like everyone pays dues and we're kind of all in this together, but without all the baggage that really comes with. So I mean it's a professional organization. That first NAMM was really that was NAMM 22, right, Jeff?
Correct.
Summer NAMM, SNAMM 22 was our first big deadline. And so you know, from essentially, you know, kind of Q2 of 2020 to summer of 2022, those 18 months or so is what we had to build the thing in the air. Cause you know, like we said, Jeff had already had a working prototype. Terrence was kind of taking my design direction and starting to flow it in. And, you know, we were every day testing and learning and tweaking. And I mean, the funny thing about that, in my opinion, you know, very luxurious deadline. When I think about working at an agency and building a piece of software for a client, 18 months is like easily twice as long as you would ever get to build anything. Right.
Wow.
But when it's essentially three dudes with a couple of, you know, helpers on the side, it was very, very, very quick. And we showed up that first day with, I mean, I Jeff, correct me, I'm not trying to be derogatory here, but with like a half working application. It was rough, and we stayed up real late that first night getting it ready for day two.
And that's yeah. at NAMM. Were you guys demoing the product
in our
then?
Hotel room? Wow. Yeah, we kind of had a rough demo version on that first day because Terrence was, you know, back at the shop still making the magic happen, and we stayed up very late that first night getting it ready. So we just hit the ground running on day two and, you know, had a projector, you know, had a screen, had a projector, had guitars set up so that people could, as they're walking by, see us noodling around on a Tom Petty song or whatever. And they'd stop and be like, what the hell is that? And we're like, take the guitar, see if you can play along.
Cool.
And, yeah, it was that first year, it was very, very, it was touch and go for a while there, but it ended up being a great experience. And so, yeah, that was our, to answer your original question, that was our sort of, not quite 2 year, design dev cycle that got us there.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, man, I've heard so many people who are in the tech world talk about just getting something out, just get something out. It's like, it doesn't have to be fully functional. It doesn't have to be the full vision. In fact, it's better if it's not the full vision, because then you're not building a bunch of features people aren't actually going to use, you know. It's better to build a minimum viable product, which, you know, is something we thought about a lot with our company too, which was like, let's build something that's valuable and functional and that's simple to start, and then we'll start to pull our users and go like, hey, what do you like about this? What don't you like? What do you want? What do you want to see? and sort of build from there. Already kind of knowing, it's like, you know, we were both professional musicians. I was full time for 10 years. And so, like, I sort of knew what was needed, but also I have, you know, I am one person with one person's experience. So the idea was, let's build the smallest version possible and then expand, you know, and we're very much still like in that process now. But I wanted to ask too, since we're sort of getting into the nitty gritty of what Cadence is, what is Cadence and what does it do?
I'll take that. So Cadence is it's a browser-based software for musicians to sync pretty much everything for a live performance across devices in real time. Customize, you know, you can put lyrics, chords, sheet music, audio, MIDI, video, you can control lights. Obviously with MIDI, you get a lot of things like you can do program changes for guitar effects.
Pedal boards,
for big spaceship like pedal boards, exactly. We basically, you know, in terms of the idea and the feature bloat, as it were, we were basically kind of like little kids in a candy store in the sense of like, let's give ourselves everything we've ever really wanted. I mean, it hasn't gotten to everything, but we've added a lot of things that are just like, this is something I've always wanted. And I am now here looking at it, which is an amazing feeling, like the capo feature. Something I've always wanted to be able to do, have a single person be able to transpose if they're an acoustic player, like, oh, I want to not play in B flat. I want to play like M and G while the rest of the band is still in B flat. It's been cool to see all those kind of things come to life.
You horn guys can understand that, I'm sure.
We do a lot of transposing. I play a lot of guitar too, though, so I'm using that capo. Yeah. I'm using that capo every now and then.
Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
No, you go ahead.
I was just gonna say when we were first working on this, I have my own experiences, but Jeff is the one who's, you know, at the time was playing in a few different cover bands. I think you kind of narrowed it down a little bit since then, right?
Yeah.
Which we're all thankful for. He was kind of our boots on the ground, alpha tester really for,
right,
a year or more as these, features were going live and getting tested and bug fixing and, you know, getting into those kind of cycles. When we talk about MVP, again, coming from a more traditional, sort of agile background, that's exactly what, you know, if I was in charge of the developers, which we're all glad that I'm not, that absolutely would have been the way the path we took. And simply because like Jeff really, you know, came to this thing with this Steve Jobs like vision of what this thing is going to do and who it's going to be for. We've had this conversation. I was very clear from those early days that he's the visionary. We're going to try to build, everything that he wants. And my job is to try to get in his head and figure out how to make it useful and beautiful.
Nice.
And kind of stay out of the way and not govern the inspiration.
Then you're all kind of vibrating on your own individual highest frequencies possible, right? It's like you're focused on the things that you're good at. That's cool.
Totally. And it certainly didn't give us the shortest path to victory.
Sure.
It's a unique working environment for all of us, I'm sure. But for me, I mean, I've been working in agencies for 15, 20 years it has taken some effort for me to kind of tamp down my natural reaction, you know, in that way. And I think, you know, the product is the better for it. And that isn't to say we're not always, we just went into beta. And so, you know, we're getting now folks who we don't know around the world using it, and giving us feedback, which is amazing. But, just to go very quickly back to that first NAMM, one of the things that we had kind of sort of had on our radar, but, you know, we were like, we got to hit, you know, regional touring, cover bands. We got to find, those touring original acts. This is for folks who are doing community organizations. These are folks who are working in worship. We kind of had a sense that it could be used by a number of different demographics. One of the ones that I brought up but was not at the top of our heap going in was the education market. I come from an education family. My mom, brother, wife, they're all teachers. My wife is an elementary music teacher, and so
Cool.
I kind of always had this in the back of my head that like there is going to be a way that we can use this in the classroom, especially because it's built as a decentralized system that educator can use it as the in-class sort of learning and rehearsal tool. You can, it's built to go up on stage for the performance, but there's this other thing in between where students go elsewhere. They go home or they go to a rehearsal room and they can bring this with them, right? It is totally decentralized in that way. You don't need the music director or the teacher, whomever's in charge, to be running the set. You can go in and just like you would assume in like Google Drive, or whatever, that you can be working on stuff at the same time. And I think there was a light bulb there when, and I don't know why, but Jeff and I have recognized this at both NAMs, but that first one for sure, I was getting approached by teachers over and over and over again. And that's when we kind of had that light bulb moment where we're like, I think we need to figure out how to market this thing to the education market. And that has really, there's a that that's a big variable in the equation that's got us from that first NAM to where we are today to beta.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think a lot about who is this for as like a central question of anybody who's an entrepreneur who's starting a new company, and it's really interesting that teachers were coming up to you. I mean, that's such a cool. That's like why you go to events like NAMM, right? That's like why you get yourself out there, even when you feel like you deep down you're like, ah, oh, the product isn't good enough yet. We're losing our minds and we're staying up late. But it's like we might have found out who our target demographic is, or at least who a lot like where perhaps a large percentage of our income could come from, like that's,
Right.
have you guys thought about that? Like how are you monetizing right now? What's the cost? And what have you noticed in terms of the people using it?
Well, Jeff, do you want to just speak anecdotally about some of the folks you've talked to and kind of what they have mentioned that they would assume they would have to pay for something like that?
I mean, it's really varied depending on, to be clear, we're still in beta, so no billing has been turned on as of yet. But
Sure.
just in casual conversation, I've heard numbers, like, oh, this seems like, at this, obviously we're going to be a tiered type of thing with different levels of functionality, but like, I've heard, oh, this seems like kind of a $10 a month. I've heard people say I'd pay $100 a month for this because it solves so many of my problems and lets me do things that were as of now or as of then like impossible. So it has really ranged. Finding that magic number is obviously an art in itself, and I'm sure in these next few months we'll figure out, what people are using the most, what to put in which tier. And then, the whole, obviously that's gonna direct to consumer, but then you think about, like an education enterprise type model. That's a whole other big conversation. So we're
And
still.
there's more variables in that part of the conversation too, because we can get, there are like federal and state grants that you can get to help subsidize something that's meant for the education market.
And programs have budgets, man. Programs have budgets. I mean, like not all, but like a lot
I
of
mean, I know
programs have
exactly what they are
budgets.
because my wife runs an education, a music education budget, and it is uninspiring to say
Yeah, I mean, like for
the
sure, like for an
least.
elementary music teacher, for sure that's going to be the case. My wife is a band director as well. Her budget's limited. I'm a you know, I run a jazz program at a university, and my budget is significant. And so it just depends on where you're at and who you're talking to, and if you're at a university that's solvent versus a university that's in the process of failing or whatever. But I, man, I paid, like, we used Soundtrap during COVID, you know, the online DAW, that had some of those capabilities of, like, students being able to do things on their own, students being able to work on the same project at the same time. And we paid a significant amount of money to have our students using that program. So that's, you know, that's an interesting angle in my mind for you guys, is exploring that, like, especially higher education, you know?
Right.
And maybe even in more contemporary music-leaning schools, the Berklees, the McNally-Smiths, unfortunately.
Yes.
Rest in peace.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we luckily just, I mean, just through good fortune and just the nature of the Minneapolis community, know so many people plugged into different kinds of schools. You know, our the event that we have coming up, Wavefront, the keynote speaker, Michael Caine, instructor at McPhail. You know, there's just, we know a lot of people, fortunately. And it's funny you bring up Soundtrap, Adam. I should send you, there's a video of Cadence actually on one half of the screen controlling virtual instruments inside of Soundtrap on the other half of the screen. Because it's, I mean, what I always, because one of the schools that we work with uses Soundtrap. And I was like, there's, you know, use the Chromebook little connector where the MIDI is talking to Soundtrap and they can play drum beats. They can slow things down, obviously. They can change keys. There's just so many things they can do in a practice and, you know, recording their own practice, but also seeing their charts at the same time.
Very cool. Yeah, that's awesome. That's a school that's using Cadence and Soundtrap at the same time. Cadence controlling Soundtrap.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. Well, dudes, you mentioned Wavefront. We should talk a little bit about it. You guys, you know, you're starting, you've started this tech venture in Cadence, and, you know, how does someone who's starting a new venture get connected? Is this one of the ways? Is doing an event like this one of the ways? What's Wavefront?
Yeah, so you know, Jeff and I have very different networks, but we both recognize that, you know, part of the strength of what we're doing here is predicated upon our ability to, you know, bring folks in, you know, from our various non-Cadence adventures. And, you know, rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing, right? Mm. Like, let's, both NAMs, we hung out with the Jamstick guys, and, you know, there's a pretty obvious bridge there. And, you know, their office is, what, a mile and a half from my house here in St. Louis Park. Like,
cool.
We're, you know, there's so much going on in a very few area codes in this city. It's really, really exciting. And so when we started thinking about, like, well, how do we, you know, do we like rent out a bar and host like a happy hour or something? Like, networking is lame, but we know we want to like get all these folks together. It just feels like there's a lot of kinetic energy there.
Yeah.
I just came off of an 8-year stint where I was the president of AdFed, which is an agency, again, sort of non-union union type deal. And one of the things we do every year is throw an award show called The Show. And it's, I mean, it's big. It's a big party. There's 1,000 people. We rent out Orchestra Hall. It's massive. But, wow. You know, what that kind of gave me the confidence to do is to come to that conversation and be like, I know how to throw a party for 1,000 people. I think I can do it for 100 or 150 or whatever. Let's see what we can do. We also did a mini demo last year, which is really cool.
Yeah, we did one of those. 2 summers ago, we presented, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, like just a great organization, and you know, if you're anybody who's not familiar, it's a very quick, like 7 minute presentations. Like you've got to get up there and get it done immediately. But it allowed for a number of startups to get up there and do a demo or show their software. And we thought, you know, let's kind of put these two things together. We definitely want like a cool, you know, environment. We want there to be food and drinks and people to be, you know, have fun and relax. And if they got to take a night out, especially for those of us with like families and kids and stuff, like you better make it worth it. But also like it's got to be educational, it's got to be informative, it's got to be something more than just a, you know, just a happy hour. So having folks do that kind of mini demo style, real quick, 5-7 minute presentations, and then again, Jeff, you know, getting in touch with Michael Caine from McPhail, and he's got an app called Equay that is doing some amazing things in the DEI space as well for you know, connecting students that may otherwise not have access to this kind of technology.
Cool.
And again, we're just seeing so many beautiful sinews between. So yeah, that is coming up here Thursday, August 1st. 6 to 9 p.m. Is that right, Jeff?
Yep.
Thursday, August 1st. What companies will be represented? We're gonna be there. Gig Boss is gonna be there. We'll have a table.
Yep.
We'll have a little thing where people can see what our app does. Who else is represented?
Yeah, well, first I want to just remind, I don't know if you remember, Adam, but I think I just found you because you and I have, oddly enough, never played on any gig together, you know, which is, I mean, it's funny, and at the same time, it's like, yeah, this is a big town, but it's also a small town at the same time. But I remember seeing, it's like, wait, this guy's got a music app? What is this? And then I think I reached out, can't remember if it was just on Facebook or something, like, hey, you've got this thing. And I was like, let's know each other because we're both doing these things. And then
Yeah,
we just
man.
that Jana and I had played on the David Bowie tribute together. So that was
Yeah,
really
my wife Jana, for those of you listening that don't know, and she's a vocalist and had to learn 22 Bowie songs in a week or something like that. It was just a last minute
Wow.
call for her to be added to the show, and we were
Yes.
like, we had just moved. I think we had just moved up here recently. I can't remember if that was, or was that post-COVID? Was that post-COVID?
Pre-COVID,
It was pre-COVID.
it was September of 2019.
So that's the fall we moved here, and we had
Oh.
like a 1-year-old, and Janet was just like in headphones full time for a week learning those tunes. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that you guys got to work together.
Yeah, and then as far as like, and then I think I reached out to you in the very early rumblings of what Wavefront was going to be, and then it kind of just exploded from there. You had recommended I reach out to Hans from Campfire Music. So in terms of like the, you know, people who will be speaking, it's a pretty cool lineup. We've got Campfire, who I just mentioned, Patrick Amundsen from a really cool app called Collabs, which is you know, like distance recording.
Nice.
Concert Hub from Sam Weiss, who they are they're doing things in the how do I don't want to misconstrue his brilliant because it's a really cool idea. It helps, in his words, helps bands maximize the impact of performances by connecting fans to their music, merch, and more.
Oh yeah, cool.
So they're very new. So I'm excited to see what his presentation is like. Then of course there's you. You know what you're doing, and I'm excited to see what you do. I was actually playing around on the new version today, or the it was you said it was a new version on Android.
Android's new version is out now. Yeah, the iOS should be out later today. Actually, right after this, I just got to finish making screenshots. It's kind of dumb,
we got this far and it's like done and the screenshots aren't done, but that's where we're at. So I got to get the screenshots right. And then the iOS goes up probably later today.
Well, congrats on that. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
And then we're Patrick Flanagan from, he's got an app called Voloco. I think you and I had talked about it. It's a mobile recording app and social music sharing platform. I've seen it can do like vocal effects. It can do auto tune. They're really cool company that I'm happy that our lawyer, our business lawyer actually introduced us to. And then our friends again from Jamstick, Jimmy Granger and Mike Green. I'm sure you've probably played or with one or both of them.
Mike, guitar player, Mike Green.
Green. Yep.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, my, I think I know. I think I know Mike. I've known of Jamstick for quite some time, but.
Yep. And then, there's us and then, Michael and like, Anton had mentioned from his app Equay.
Okay, cool.
So it's going to be a cool night. Going to be a lot of different, I think, angles of the music world that all kind of point to each other. And
Yeah. A lot of people trying to fix big problems. I mean, like really, the campfire thing is like he's shooting for the moon, you know. Hans, you know, doing the Campfire Foundation. For those of you who don't know, is a company that's going to essentially like its goal is to fix the streaming. Problem. The streaming problem being, those of you that listen to the podcast know, being that like artists can't make enough money on streaming platforms. They're sort of incentivized to operate in the red anyway, and major record labels are taking 60% on every dollar of every dollar that comes into a company like Spotify. So they're kind of running the show still. It's a big problem, and he's creating a nonprofit organization. And they're raising like $14 million right now or something crazy like that.
Thank you for talking about,
To build a streaming platform for indie artists. Yeah. That pays musicians fairly, which is an idea. Like I told him when he told me about it, I actually did, it's funny, man. I did a masterclass at his high school. And I had just started Gig Boss at the time. And I was talking about being an entrepreneur and talking about, you know, executing your ideas. And, he found me at a jam session when I was back in town not long ago, a year ago maybe, and was like, oh man, this, you gave a music business masterclass on, you know, at my high school, and now I'm doing this thing. And I was like, dude, that's so rad. But I've had a fight. I told him I've got like a 5-page manifesto on how to fix streaming on my desk here that will not be executed until Gig Boss starts making some serious cash. But that's an exciting idea, awesome. I think, to go big, you know, like that.
I love that.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those of you that don't know, Gig Boss is an organizational tool for freelancers and band leaders. It's essentially a way to get musicians on the same page with their schedules and a way for you to track payments and, you know, be able to pull up directions, contact people in your group, you know, keep everybody on the same page. All the gig details are in one place. It was kind of born of like, you know, I played this band, The Good, The Bad, The Funky for a long time, which is a 10-piece cover band that did a bunch of like classic funk solo and some modern tunes. And, you know, it was like every email chain was 50, 100 emails long, and buried somewhere in the middle of that chain was the details to the next gig for every gig. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a nightmare. And I'd be going through these and they're all in like, you know, whatever. Older guys maybe don't use email the same way younger guys do. Some of these cats are like, you know, they're not super old, but they're like, they're a little older generation wise. And so they're sending these like silly memes and like things that are like, you know, slightly inappropriate. And I'm like, ah, man, come on. I'm like scrolling through these 50 emails, trying to find like, I got a baby and like Jan is getting home from work and I'm trying to run to the gig. And I'm like, I don't even know where this gig is. And it was like the combination of all of those things. And then forgetting to get paid for a gig. I forgot to get paid for a gig, paid my band in cash, didn't get paid. And then just didn't realize I never got paid until months and months later, because it was a grant funded gig. The person did reach out to me and go, hey, are you missing $600? But you know, if that's a venue, like a venue's not going to call me and be like, hey, we forgot to pay you. It's like, that's just money I lost forever. And so it was really that moment that my wife was like, hey, we should make something that makes sure you don't miss a payment again. So there's a lot in the books page that's related to like, Mark, this is paid. You've paid this person. Has the venue paid you yet? And then seeing those numbers move on your books page. And then you can itemize things by group, by time frame. So you can see like, I made this much money last month. I made this much money 3 months ago or in the last 90 days. I made this much money with this group last year. Ah, that's not that much money. I don't like playing with them. I'm not gonna play with them anymore or whatever. You know, it's like there's great little things you can deduce from the data in the app. And then there's lots, so much more that we have designs for it. That we just haven't built yet.
That's so we're super smart and definitely like a white space right now. Like I can't think of anything. Can you add like a headache variable in there? So you're like, yeah, I made $1,000 with these guys, but it was a $1,200 headache.
Yeah, right. Dude, you know, it's funny. Like when I was touring with Youngblood Brass Band, a bunch of guys in that band, we all were joking that there should be an app called Backstage Pass, ? Where like you just rate the backstages of venues and you just go like, you know, the venue was all right. You know, the crowd was all right, but the backstage was trash, man. There's like no drinks. They charged us for water. You know, it's like that'd be a funny, I think eventually, you know, what we'll do with Gig Boss at some point is like, we're going to add things like peer to peer payments and mileage tracking, kind of like the business side of things to the books page. But, at some point potentially having like public facing profiles where you can get booked for a gig, you know, freelancers mm-hmm. can get booked, bands can get booked, portal for like people looking to book wedding bands can come in and search for bands, things like that. It's like, that's something we've been talking about. Man, we've also talked about building, I don't even want to say this cause it's such a great idea. I'm not even gonna say it. I have actually, I listen to this other podcast where they talk about startup ideas all the time. And I just like, I'm full of startup ideas. So if you guys are down, can I tell you two ideas that I've had?
Sure.
Oh, hey. Heck yeah.
Okay. Heck yeah. So idea number one, this could be done by an individual. It could be done by a group of people. But my first idea is in the 90s, about 25% of major companies used jingles for brand recognition. And you know, jingles, it's like I could sit here and go $5, $5, $5. And you guys know what comes next, right? $5 foot long, right? It's like we all know from these jingles back in the day, I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. It's like we all know these jingles and they all are associated with brand recognition. So we know that music is really powerful in brand recognition, in building something. And today only about 1% of companies use jingles for their brands. So I think that's a huge hole. And what I would probably do as a startup person or as to start out, I would probably just write a bunch of jingles for major companies that are like short, poppy, fun, catchy, cute little jingles. And then I would start posting them on social media and just tagging the companies. I just blow them up on social media and eventually maybe put them on Spotify or at some point, you know, hope to leverage whatever kind of success I have on social media to sell those songs to the companies for large amounts of money. But also, it's like there's ways you could use AI to write these songs too at some point, I'm sure, and to just turn it into machine writing, which is like the most depressing thing to say, I'm sure, or to hear. But what do you think? What do you think of that? Crazy. Idea number one.
Yeah, I mean, figuring out how to monetize it, of course, is the big step we all trip over because you know we're all idea people. But the stat you threw out there that so few companies are using any kind of like audio tag anymore is insane to me. I mean, insane. It just seems like this is, you know, human nature, brain philosophy kind of stuff, thinking that goes back to the 50s. That's like people remember stuff when you put it to a little tune. Even if it's simple as, you know, but a ba ba ba, or we have the meats, like it can be as monotone and like,
yes, you
know, almost cynical of the practice of writing a jingle is that,
yes,
it's crazy to me that so few companies are leveraging this obviously powerful tool these days.
Yes, dude, I have to listen to myself say the second idea. So I remember it. Hold on a second.
That's awesome.
I wrote it down, but then I couldn't find where I wrote it down. Oh, this is a great one. Okay, so back in the day, there was I'm gonna turn my recording off. In Motown times, right? They had like a hit room. They had a room where they would sit down and they'd listen to a record, and everyone in Motown would vote on whether or not it was a hit.
Mm-hmm.
Digital hit room, man. That was my second idea. Build a space where bands can come and like upload a new single, and fans can vote on whether or not they think the single's a hit. And then somehow fans can be incentivized to release a song a certain way, or fans can be rewarded by like having access to music early, perhaps. I don't even know how you'd use it, but I just thought it was a fun idea. The hit room.
I think that's interesting. And I'm a geek on like neuroscience, and they've done some things like that. And it's funny because whether or not the votes themselves affected the, you know, if people are aware of what other people are voting for, that influences their vote. So it'd be interesting to see how that could be, you know, could it be, would it be a blind, you know, whatever would be a truly like you're solely basing this on its own merit or the social contagion element of it. I'd be curious.
Yeah. Well, I imagine that people inside the hit room were influenced by other hands going up, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But there's a lot of polls where you can't see what the poll results are until, I mean, that'd be an easy way to do it.
Until after your vote, yeah.
Do people even want to know that information? Like, they, you know, there's a lot of, there's a lot of like, would this even work? But I think it's a fun idea, you know, hit room.
Yeah.
It's just got a good name, too. It's like,
it is a good name.
Create a space where people can hold music. I thought about that for a while too, like with a digital, like sort of like digital vinyl room. Like you kind of have records that you listen to. Since everything is so like playlist based, like it'd be pretty niche. But
well, segueing back into existing apps, today is kind of a big milestone for both of us, Adam, because I put in my first gig into Gig Boss.
Oh, right.
For a gig that's using Cadence for the performance. So
nice, was, man.
Again, we were talking about like just the fact that we use our own apps in our daily life.
We do.
So I just thought it was kind of a cool thing. And one thing maybe you could clear up for me and anyone else who might be listening is,
sure,
as far as the you know, who is Gig Boss for? Is it equally for people who are on, you know, like I was maybe incorrectly assuming it was just for band leaders? Is it for every musician?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, it's hard to know, and we're still kind of learning who our users are, and that's part of the work that we're doing right now. Is like we're sending out surveys and we're trying to find out who people are and how they use the app. But you know, the friends of mine who use it, who are like super users, they're like me. They're both freelancers and they're band leaders. And so there's a lot of people that fit that description. There are a lot of people that don't tour nationally all the time, but do play all the time, and play in sometimes dozens of different groups. And that was certainly the case for me. So like for me, it was difficult for me to track how much money I made in general. How much money I had paid other people in general, because I was in too many things. I was like band leading for my wife's group and for the Adam Echo Orchestra, which is an 18-piece group, and for the Adam Echo Quintet, which is a 5-piece group, for Lulu's Playground, which is a 4-piece group, for my trio Supercell, for I have other bands too. I have way too many bands. Nookie Jones. It's like I was just like doing so many things as a leader. And then I was also, you know, I was playing in Pete Whitman's Extat, I was playing in Graydon Peterson's Quartet, I was playing in the Band of Praise, I was playing in the Jack Brass Band, I was touring with Youngblood Brass Band, I was touring with Nookie Jones, started playing with the Hornheads, doing recordings for Corey Wong. So it was just like all of these things as a player were stacking up so much. And I see all my friends around me doing the same stuff. They're all leading their own bands. They got small groups they play with on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night in jazz clubs. And then they're playing like in wedding bands and cover bands on the weekends, making $400 or $500 a show doing that. And so it was just like, man, there's like for me, it was too many things to organize. And I'd be going like tax time, I'd be going back to my calendar and I'd be like going through my Google calendar, like, okay, so I know because of the 1099 that the Dakota plate paid this, but I don't remember, like, what did I pay the band? Did I take 15% for myself or not on this? I can't remember if I took a leader fee. It's like, I didn't usually do that for a long time, but I started doing that later on in my career. So I was doing all this advancing show work and booking the shows myself and booking the tours myself a lot of the time. And so it's just like, I needed a tool to organize it. And that was really like what it was about. And so when I built it, I imagined like the people that use this are going to be people like band leaders, certainly, but like any freelancer who's having trouble seeing the aggregate, like the first time I ever knew how much money I made in an entire year was last year. Cause I had finally used GigBoss for a full year with the books page. That was the only time I really, like the IRS, I hope is not listening, like I really for sure 100%, like there was a lot of guesswork going on. And I wanted to know, like I got paid in cash and they're not sending me a 1099, but that's money that counts. I want to know, I want to be able to buy a house. I want to be able to buy a car. I want to be able to show the bank that I made some money. And so like that was a big part of it for me, was like, I want to know exactly how much I made. I want to know what I made with each band. I want to be able to leverage my time better, you know, and that's partly how I started to look at things and go, I actually want to spend more time here. Ooh, this thing actually is working really well. And I didn't even see it until I looked at these numbers, you know? But you know, the cool thing is that like when a band leader creates an event, creates in a group and then creates an event, you get an invite, you can just accept decline. So if you're in the group, you can just hit accept and it shows up in your feed. And that stuff also gets tracked on your books page. So if you're just a freelancer playing in a dozen bands and people are sending you invites, you can, so what I did was like, I accept decline invites, but I also created a category called freelance. And so anything that's a freelance gig just goes under my freelance category. And then I go, okay, as a freelancer, which for me, that's like, you know, when North Dakota State University asked me to be the guest artist at their jazz festival in January, it's like, that's one of my freelance gigs. I'm going out there by myself. They're buying my charts ahead of time. So I'm tracking all that income, the money they paid on my charts, the money that they pay me to come out for the gig, the gas reimbursement, all that stuff gets tracked on my books page in GigBoss. And so I can see in my freelance category, which for me is my most lucrative category now, because I'm not playing full time anymore. And I'm not like booking tours for my bands as much as I was. I can see like, okay, that's how much I made as a freelancer. Here's how much I made in these various different bands. Some of them that I lead, some of them that I don't. But man, I've got 20 bands on my groups page, you know? And we also just thought like, man, this could be, I'm yapping now about GigBoss because this is exciting for me, but like we have a dance company in Maine, a Hungarian folk dance company that uses it to organize their 25 members. And, you know, we have a photography company in Florida that hires all the freelancers that does the national gymnastics competitions, the photographers, they use our app to organize their photographers. So it's really like, and any kind of freelancer that has to organize a group of people could use the app and have the financial back end on the books page. And we're just trying, like, our goal now is just to make it more and more useful, you know, add value.
That's super smart. And it's exactly where I was going to go, which is to say, like it sounds like it's really geared towards, music gigs, but, I mean, how with, I don't think, you know, the gig economy thing, was a fad that's going to go anywhere really. The more I talk to, creative professionals, especially those, you know, getting into their 30s and 40s, for those who haven't, I'm only hearing that they're more interested in trying to figure out how to make it work out on their own. And this is one of those things for those people who might be on this, you know, one end of the spectrum that's like, I just don't want the anxiety of not knowing, like not tracking everything really well. Type A people, I can see, like, if I don't have a job to go to every day, I don't know how I would keep my sanity. And then on the other side of the spectrum, I think, retrospective analytics, like you talked about being able to, for the first time, look back and be like, actually this working with this group or for this client was the most lucrative, or some ratio of time commitment to another variable, whether that's, you know, simply dollars or something else. I think that that's really smart too, for people who are like, actually, I'm happy with where I'm at in the organization of my life, but I need to know how to do it better. And I need those data points to build up over time so that I can look back and start filtering.
Yeah. Well, you know what else, man? It's like when you're in the thick of working as a full-time freelancer, which was my life for 10 years, sometimes you have no idea what money you're going to make next month or the month after that. And one thing that we've talked about doing is like, you have all this data input already. Books page right now is for all your gigs that pass the date. But what we've been talking about adding is, here's what I'm going to be making next month. Here's what I'm making in next 2 months. Create a budget for next month. Create a budget for the month after. It's like that that kind of stuff would have been so helpful for me and my family when I was working full time. I know I was making good money, but there were times when it was like, if I had been a little more disciplined with how I spend or where I spend or when I spend, things could have been a little bit easier. And certainly like creating some kind of view that's forward looking as well. You know, so we're not just looking at past data and making, making changes on future decisions, which is also great. You know, you also have that look into next month and the month after.
Totally.
If I could jump in for just a sec, it was cool to hear you say that it's, you know, both band leaders and band members that are using, or people are using it in both ways. Cause I, again, you know, thinking about it as Cadence, you know, I'm the band leader for some bands, but I'm a member of other people's bands. And it's cool to see that it works for, you know, in a similar way for you. Whatever end of it you're on, it's useful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the idea is, and it's like, it's not the sexiest thing either. It's like, it's data. It's like, it's schedules, it's finances, it's gig details, which is important. Like in the notes section, you can put in links to recordings and charts, and I do all that. So like whatever thing I used to email out to the bands and hope everybody remembers that I sent an email that has all that stuff in it, it all lives in a central place. They all know it's on the Gig Boss event. You can go and you can find the playlist that has all the songs. You can find the set list. You can find the Wi-Fi password for the venue. That was like our tour manager with Youngblood Brassband was always so pissed off when we asked her what the Wi-Fi password was. You know, she's like, look on the day sheet, is hanging in the bus, you know. But having it in the app, it'd be right there. So yeah, like, you know, I had used Master Tour a little bit, which is similar to what Gig Boss does. The barrier to entry is much higher than Gig Boss. You know, it's like you have to have a pretty significant monthly fee to use Master Tour, and you can't just like open it up and create a group and create events. You have to have somebody pretty much invite you to events, somebody who has a bigger account with Master Tour. So, you know, the idea with Gig Boss is like, this is your organizational software. This is musicians' organizational software for every musician, for the normal musician, the one who lives in their city and plays in their city 30 times a month or 25 times a month and needs a way to organize it all. It's like, that's ultimately who we're after. But also like, man, we've been talking a lot about where do we go from there? How do we grow bigger? How do we get, you know, I don't know how transparent I want to be. How do we get to a $50 million exit? You know, like how do we, like, let's reverse engineer that. Who are we attracting? Who's our customer? Who else could benefit from this kind of organizational software? And, as things get better and cleaner, and as we add functionality, I think we'll see more people jumping on from areas outside of music.
Well, I'm, you know, starting to recommend it to people, because I know so many people that have this problem that you're talking about. It's the more headaches you reduce, you know, I think you and I, our companies were very much talking to the same people about different parts of the, you know, of the music life. So
yeah,
it's really cool, like, to see another company taking up that mantle and doing something cool with it.
Yeah, thanks, man. I feel the same way about you guys. Did you guys raise money?
Nope.
Just did it.
We are,
that's awesome.
We are bootstrapping it. Yeah. How about you?
We raised money. We had a friend build us a clickable prototype.
Cool.
Her name is Hannah Grossman. She was the project manager at the Nerdery. She was the wife of a cello player who played with me in my band Lulu's Playground. So it was just a friend. And she built the UX, the clickable prototype, and just kind of basically was like, hey, pay me if you can. No big deal if you can't. You know, if you guys get funded. So we went and we raised $30,000 right away, Since then, we've raised another 100,000, and not even close to that is in the bank. So we're working our way through it and still trying to build. I would love to raise a little bit more, but
yeah, no, dude, congrats already, man. That those are already I'm looking forward to those days.
yeah, it's definitely eased some of the tension, and it has allowed me to like find some good people and keep them, which has been really nice. And we've been doing equity trades and things too, but I know you guys got to go. Thank you so much for coming talking. Wavefront is August 1st. The tickets are free. I'm going to put the ticket link in the bio. You do have to get tickets, but they are at no cost to you. So come and hang. Check out all of these amazing different companies. WavefrontMN.com. Wavefront, M-N, WaveFrontMN.com. It'll be in the show notes as well. Grab your tickets for August 1st. I'll be there. I'll be driving down from the Upper Peninsula wearing my flannel shirt. I don't have any flannel shirts, but that's what people wear up here. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it very much. Fun to hear about Cadence, and best of luck to you guys.
Cool, man. Thanks for having us, and look forward to seeing you on the 1st.
All right. Likewise.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Anton. All right, see you.
Later.
Thanks so much for listening to my conversation with Jeff and Anton from Cadence. Links to their software are below, in addition to links to the tickets for Wavefront, the music technology event where GigBoss will have a table and be doing a short 7-minute presentation on our software. August 1st at Improving in Minneapolis, August 1st, 2024. Grab those tickets. They are free tickets, but you do have to have tickets to get there, so you have to jump to the link and get those tickets. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Go start that Hit Room company. I'm not going to use it. Go do it. Start writing some jingles for big companies. Make that happen. Go make those dollars. I'm rooting for you. Thanks for listening to the podcast. See you on the next one.